Welcome to Complete Edition, the podcast between a PlayStation Trophy Hunter and an Xbox Achievement Hunter. This is episode 29. I'm your host, Compulsive Nerd, and I am joined by AJ. How you doing, AJ?
I'm doing well. I had a really fun week, or 2 weeks. I went to see Top Gun Maverick again and enjoyed it a lot. And I've done a ton of gaming, and I enjoyed the sort of Summer Game Fest showcases, some of the stuff that came out from there. So yeah, it's been good. I wanted to say, though, I've got to take, you know, the big L award, because last time I said with basically certainty that GoldenEye would be at the Xbox show, and I ran through all the reasons why, and I had lots of reasons. I was like, you know, it makes sense because of this, because of that, and then it just didn't show up. So there's like, in terms of everyone online right now, there's a lot of like copium of like, oh, well, the 25th anniversary of the game is in August, or maybe Nintendo will announce it because the original game was N64 exclusive. And I think those are like pretty good arguments, but I assume it is like real and coming, but I don't want to sound like, you know, one of those Silent Hill fans that's like, you know, no, the next event will be the event, you know, where they've just been saying that for like the past 6 years or whatever, you know, and it's just really tragic to look at. So I may just sort of give up on it in terms of this show and saying that it's coming, because I made a fool out of myself. And I mean, I feel like it has to be real still, because the alternative is that they have like this game with achievements that run, and they just have it like over at Rare, and they're just like, the employees are playing it like between themselves and getting achievements, and then they're just never going to release it to the public, which would itself be like a really crazy story if things were like that bad with the licensing, I guess, and they couldn't figure out the rights to release it, but sort of had this finished product that they can get achievements from. So I'm hoping it does show up, but after you know, admit to my mistakes to everyone, apologize and say I fucked it up. I got it wrong.
I'm with you. I was watching and I was waiting and I didn't see any of that 007, and I was like, oh. But I had so much fun with Summer Games Fest, even though Keely's show was probably the worst one. But he kind of was like, tamper expectations, or like, this isn't going to be the biggest thing ever.
It's nice seeing like the Callisto Protocol there. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I think for me, the Xbox show was probably the highlight. But I mean, you could tell even with the Xbox show, like 2022 has been like probably the worst year to be hit by COVID, I'd say, in terms of delays and stuff coming out. Like 2021 was sort of a bit weird in some ways, but it feels like a lot of games were like just getting done when COVID hit, like right at the end of the development cycle. So it feels like a lot of stuff still came out in 2021, whereas 2022, it feels like these are the games that were sort of like mid development when COVID started. So it's like, it's really pushed back a lot of stuff. And you could definitely tell that with the showcases. I think you could tell it with the Xbox show, where they were like, okay, we're just going to focus on the next 12 months now, which I think makes sense. I think it was the right move to do that. But to be like, you know, everything's getting delayed, so we don't want to show you stuff that's like quite far out and put like a 2024 date on it, because it could get delayed into like 2026, and no one wants to see that and get hyped up for something sort of that far away. So I like that, but at the same time, you could tell, like, you know, stuff's not brilliant this year for brand new releases. But
I think that Xbox, and not just Xbox, I think all the companies are starting to learn that those blowout showcases where they show a mass amount of games and then they're like super far away, it tends to linger. So what ends up happening is every single time they do a showcase, they're like, oh, the games that they showed last time are going to show up. Like, and then when they don't, they're like, oh, you know, where's Hellblade 2? Where's this game? Where's that game? And it's like, well, they showed it way too early. Like, yeah, it's early into the development, and now they're having to sit there and have their audience complain because they're not showing it. It's like, this was so brilliant to show the games that are going to be in the next 12 months. Yeah. Keep it short. Keep your audience's attention for the next 12 months, and then show the next 12 months when they've played all these games that you just showed. Like, that's the way to do it, dude. And that's so smart.
I think for Microsoft as well, like in like 2018, like 2018 to 2020, when they were announcing all these games, they were in like a bad spot in terms of studios before they started acquiring like Bethesda and those smaller teams in 2018. So it's like, to sell the new console, they felt like they had to announce a lot of stuff early. And also the problem for them and for all companies is like, securing talent to work on the game. So like if you've got like a, like if you're like rebooting Fable, for example, it kind of makes sense to announce it early, because a bunch of people in the UK, you know, where Playground Games are based, you know, really like Fable, and there might be game developers who are like, oh, hey, I want to work on that. And they're hiring, you know, building out a second team from, you know, the racing team to make that game. So it kind of makes sense to announce it early, because it's really great as like a recruiting tool. And I could see like Sony do that kind of thing as well. Like you have to imagine announcing stuff like Aspyr's KOTOR remake and Insomniac's Wolverine and stuff like that. Like those games, when they were announced, are pretty far out, but also they're really exciting projects that you can imagine people in like the games industry getting sort of hyped up for and wanting to be a part of those projects. So I definitely get like why they do it, and it makes sense. But yeah, I personally prefer, I mean, if it was up to me, I would love if they just announced a game when it was basically finished and it's like, hey, it's out in 6 months. I think that'd be like super hype.
Fallout 4 did that.
But I think obviously, you know, me and you and a lot of people that listen to this show, we're super like invested in the games industry. Like we watch events when they happen and we see trailers like pretty much as soon as they go up. Whereas for a lot of like the more casual crowd, like they might feel like they need like, you know, 12 months of like lead in to these games and things like that, because you know, they're not super tuned into every sort of little thing, every news story that happens in the industry. So I can see that perspective as well. I think we're, you know, like sort of the super hardcore in terms of games. So it makes sense that we have a different attitude on it. And I understand that there's like a tension between what we'd want and what like the general audiences want and stuff like that.
Right. And curious, like I always read the crazy ass chat during these events, because there are casual people who will watch it and like they get excited for games, and it's just fun to like read what people's thoughts are. And gaming, you know how gaming comments are, it can be super toxic sometimes, but it gives you an idea like how to gauge where people's excitement is. And so I watched this one channel and they did some reactions, and then they were too tired to like continue to watch the shows, so I just went to a different channel and started watching some reactions of like them doing the show. And I went back, and then the audience is like, hey, this trailer, these are what you should look for. And it's like, that's the mass audience speaking up about the games that are exciting. And I know everyone was excited about Plucky Squire, so that was like thrown out all the time. And like, Callisto Protocol is thrown out. And it's just like, these are the games that are going to rise to the top after the events are over and the hardcore watch it, like me and you. And it's like, those are what the casual audience will carry on. And that, I think that that's successful for any of these big companies, is just to have like a game take the media spotlight and carry like the masses carry that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I thought the Xbox show was like the most traditional E3 show, I'd say. Like, you know, the sort of standard. Yeah. They're kind of like the only major of the big three that still does it. I mean, Sony does it, but they do it in like September usually. Like they do it later in the year, and they normally do a big show, and I'm really excited for that. But I thought, yeah, for me, like the Xbox show, I think they did a good job with. I thought the start was exciting in terms of Hollow Knight Silksong coming to Game Pass day one, and then towards the end when they showed a lot of Redfall gameplay at the start as well, and then towards the end where they did sort of the Persona thing for the weebs and the Kojima thing, which the Kojima thing sort of leaked, but it's still like obviously it's a huge moment for, you know, for them to land a deal with Kojima, who's been like off the system for, well, Metal Gear Solid 5 was the last game, but you know, that was Konami publishing, obviously. So yeah, that was cool. And then the Starfield deep dive as well. I feel like for me, it's kind of like what we were saying about how like the casual and what we want, or the mainstream and what we want, may be different, because for me, I felt like the middle of the show kind of dragged. But then I think about what was there, and they showed like a new Minecraft action strategy game, and then they showed Overwatch 2, and then they showed Diablo 4, and I'm not really interested in any of those. But if you look at like the YouTube, you know, views and like the metrics of like people who care about those games, it's like a huge amount of people. I mean, especially anything to do with Minecraft, obviously, but the other two as well, Overwatch and Diablo. And it's like, doesn't appeal to me, but I could see how for a lot of other people, they'd be like, this is my thing. I mean, you can, especially with those three games, because those three games are sort of like, people have like their entire gaming like career based off of like multiplayer games like Overwatch or games like Diablo. And obviously, you know, the Minecraft community is huge as well. So even though, you know, there were sections of the show where I was like, this is slow and it doesn't really appeal to me, I could definitely see, like, the logic of it, like how they're trying to appeal to lots and lots of different people from lots of different genres. But the start and the end of the show was sort of the highlights for me. But obviously the low light, you know, no GoldenEye, you betrayed me. No One versus 100 as well. No Banjo-Kazooie, none of that stuff, which is sad. But people always, you know, before these shows, it's the same for all the companies. Everyone gets like hyped up over like what they think will be there or what they hope will be there. Like Avowed was another one as well from Obsidian, and that wasn't there. But they announced Pentiment, which was cool, and that's coming this year. But yeah, everyone sort of gets hyped up, like you were saying earlier as well, about like Hellblade 2 and Fable and stuff. You sort of imagine in your head, you can get carried away with the hype with like this ultimate show and these like ultimate surprises, and people sort of have these like rumors of things that are going to show up, including me. And then it's like, isn't there, and you just feel disappointed, but you've really only sort of disappointed yourself because you've just like, you've built it up even though they've not like promised that it would be there or anything like that. And that always happens with all of these shows. But yeah, I've definitely enjoyed the last few weeks of watching all the shows.
Me too. And gaming. Man, I got back to gaming big time. I have been playing a lot of games and it feels good. It feels so good. But
nice.
Let's
go into it.
I started playing House of Ashes because The Quarry just came out. And, you know, I had like a love-hate relationship with that game where I did love the game, but then like I was trying to replay it to get the platinum and I burnt out. I did like 8 playthroughs and it's the same goddamn thing every time. So I'm like, I can't do another one. I couldn't do it. And so I waited about 8 months and I picked it up this week because I needed more space on my console, but I had left it on there and I looked it up and there was a guide finally for it. And I was like, oh my God, that means I need 2 more playthroughs to get the last 4 trophies. And I did that. And that was number 227. And so I was like, fuck yes, dude. Like, it feels so good to go back to a game that I had almost completed and I could just get it done. And so I got that done and I started to roll. And then I got like, I went to my brother's, I think this was 2 weeks ago when I was talking to you. And since he had a shitty TV with like a big dead pixel area on the bottom right corner, I was like, I'm not playing anything graphically intense. I'm just going to play something simple. And I'm not saying that Pixar isn't beautiful because it is. And so I decided to start playing Stardew again. And it just confirms in my mind, since I took a break from it, it's like one of my favorite games like ever. This game is just so goddamn good. And I'm 4 trophies away from the platinum now. And I could not believe it. It all just started to come together for some, like, somehow. I just was playing and playing, and then it's like ding, ding, ding. And I'm like, oh shit, like, I'm really close. And I'm thinking about taking that game and just kind of pushing it to the side when I get 1 trophy left. Kind of like the same thing I did with House of Ashes, where, you know, I had like 4 trophies left, but I really want to make it special. I might wait till like my 250th and then just pop onto that game, and maybe I'll save the 10 million trophy. So basically you need to make a certain amount of money in the game. Like you need to make 10 million and it's going to get you a gold trophy, but that'll take a while. I'm about 5.8 million right now. And so if I get up to like 9.8 million, I can just put the game aside and then wait till I get 249, jump back into Stardew, finish it in like an hour, you know, like do something that doesn't take very long and make it special.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I love stuff like that, especially when, yeah, clearly Stardew is such a special game for you. I mean, you've played hundreds and hundreds of hours of it.
Yeah, 200, over 200 hours now. It's crazy. Yeah,
cool. So I've been playing a ton of Apex Legends. I've been playing a ton of games, generally, and had some like great games, some frustrating games, so nothing really new there. And I've also been playing a lot of Trivial Pursuit live too with some friends, and just had an absolutely fantastic time. I'm still working towards... there's an achievement to get 30 wins. So I think I'm at like 7 or 8 right now. So progress is okay. I'd say my win rate is maybe like 30-40%, which is okay. It's all right. It's a 4-player game, so it's okay. And then I've also been playing The Quarry, which I feel like I want to talk about right now because you've been playing House of Ashes.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So I assume at some point we might do like a spoiler cast for this game. So I don't want to like, obviously I don't want to talk about spoilers anyway, because you've not played it yet and you're interested in it. But also because, you know, we might do some more content on it. But I have mixed feelings about this game, both in terms of the achievements and in terms of the game itself. So I liked The Quarry. I finished one playthrough. And I did, what I did was, I think for these narrative games, I think it's really important to play them blind first, at least to me. I feel like you kind of ruin it if you look ahead and look at guides or even look at achievement names and stuff like that. So I really wanted to go in like completely fresh. Like, I'm not going to watch any more trailers. I'm not going to watch any content creators play the game. I'm just going to play it. And so I played it last weekend and just finished it. And I think I like Until Dawn quite a bit more. I know people are comparing The Quarry to Until Dawn, and it makes sense. And I think, I don't know, I feel it's a little derivative of Until Dawn in some ways. And I won't go into more detail on that. It'd be something for when we talk about the game in more detail. But it feels a bit too similar to Until Dawn for me, but just sort of slightly worse. But I could see how people prefer The Quarry as well. I know some people definitely like The Quarry more. I think they do more with the characters in The Quarry than they give the characters more time. I think The Quarry's slower paced, but when it like picks up, it really picks up. And I think that's quite compelling, sort of that like slow burn of like you get a lot of character moments and then you get all the action like go crazy and all the horror elements sort of come together all at once. And I think that's done quite well. I really enjoyed that aspect of the game.
So I know you were mentioning all these aspects of the game, but one thing that pulled me through House of Ashes was Ashley Tisdale. She was an actress that I watched growing up. And now this new game, The Quarry, has Brenda Song, which is another actress in the same area that Ashley Tisdale was in the same show. And so I was like, the entire time I played House of Ashes, I was kind of like trying to keep that character alive. And then all the rest just kind of like built up around it, which kind of like elevated that experience for me. Did you feel that with any of the actors in this game? Did
yeah,
you kind of like,
interestingly, so I quite like, I don't know. I mean, it's tough with these narrative. It's similar with like the David Cage games where like a lot of characters kind of feel like, And a lot of this, I think with Supermassive, a lot of it's intentional, whereas with David Cage, I think some of it's unintentional. There's a lot of like meme characters in that there's like characters that are like goofy and like funny and like stupid. And there's a, especially for Supermassive games, there's like a self-awareness that like the characters don't have, but like the writing does have, if that makes sense, like in terms of leaning into horror tropes and things like that. So I think the game's quite fun in that sense. There's like a moment where like a character like says some stuff, like basically says out like horror tropes out loud, like sarcastically. And it's like, and then all that stuff can actually happen. And it's quite cool in that sense. And there's a lot of stuff like that that I liked about the performances as well, because the performances demonstrate like that, like slasher sort of schlocky type genre film aspect of the game. And they really go into that quite well. But for me, I found that I quite liked Ted Raimi the most. He plays a cop, and he's really good in the game. I really enjoyed him because he's like, his intentions are really unclear for a lot of the game. And it's done in a way that he's got like a lot of different interests at the same time. And those aren't really clear to you. But you know, he's like conflicted, if that makes sense. Again, I have to keep it vague, obviously. But I really enjoyed his performance in the game. And I thought all of the cast generally did a good job with what they were given. I think maybe in some instances the writing lets it down rather than the performances. And some of the like facial animations look a bit weird as well. Those are probably like the two biggest criticisms rather than the performances. I think the performances are, a couple of them are great and some of them are just like fine. I'd say as well, one of the things that annoyed me about the game is that this happens in a lot of these types of games, happens in like Telltale games as well. There was like something that happened and I was like, okay, I don't want to do this. So I'm going to fail the QTEs because I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. What my character's doing, it's a bad idea. So I'm going to fail the QTEs. And then that made the situation way worse, like way, way worse in a way that was impossible to predict. Because it was basically like, oh, I'm going to do this thing. And I'm like, you shouldn't do this thing. So I'm going to like fuck it up. So like I drop the thing or I trip over or whatever. So like I can no longer do it. But the game was like, oh, you did that. Well, now it's like 10 times worse. And it's like, oh, God. Like that really always annoys me when I'm like, I wish I could like do, like I want the character to do a different thing. And it's like not giving me the option to do this different thing. Like the decision point must have been like a few QTEs after that point. But there's no way of knowing that on a blind playthrough. So then it was like, oh, now I've like messed up the playthrough, because that's the problem as well with these games. It's like, you know, when you've like messed it up, and it's like, even if the death isn't immediate, you're like, okay, so now I've set something in motion that is going to like absolutely ruin me. And you know when it happens, and there's a lot of fun with that as well. Like, you end up just laughing about it and enjoying it. But at the time, you sort of like, I really wish I could actually like control the character, if that makes sense. Like, instead of just going through the scripted thing, I wish it could be like, hey, say this instead, or like, do that instead. Like, I want you to do this. And it's like, but you don't even know what one of the options is, because you don't know what happens if you fail the QTEs. And then the other option, which you do know, if you succeed the QTEs, you're like, I don't want to do that. Like, that's a bad idea. So that kind of annoyed me about the game, but everything else I really enjoyed.
Do they have the totems in this game still? Like, do they have those flashes of like things that can happen?
They have tarot cards. And at the end of each chapter, you go to like a mystic type character who like she has a crystal ball, and she like gives you like a vague description of the tarot card, and then shows you like a short clip of like what can happen. So yeah, basically. But the tarot cards are like collectibles, like the totems were in Until Dawn.
Yeah, because I know there's been people that complain that those don't really help, but in House of Ashes, they helped me a lot, because there was like instances where I know, like in the flash, I can notice like small little details. And I'm like, oh, so if I don't do that action and that character is wearing that thing, then that's when they die. So I was like, okay, then that means that I'm going to try to do this thing so they're not wearing that. You know what I mean? Like, you can just pick up these super small details in those only like, what are they, 2 seconds, 3 seconds long, where it's just like a flash. It's just like, you can pick up just a little thing and then try to like play with it. And I think that you're right. You cannot, I don't think that these games are enjoyable if you do a guided playthrough for your first time. And I just looked up a guide, and it was like, you know, 3.5 playthroughs, and it's like, so maybe 4.5 for me, if because I'm always going to do a blind playthrough, always.
Yeah,
because these games are so fun that way. And especially,
and it's also a great thing to talk about as well, in terms of like, oh, what happened to this character for your play, you know, like you can have like a back and forth with people.
Not only that, but if you do it like, if you have a friend over, or you know, you do, because they have these awesome theater modes now, or like movie mode, where you can pass a controller and play as different characters. And it's like, if you do that as your first playthrough, it's like, oh yeah, my friend decided not to do this. And it's like, but if you're just by yourself and you just guide it, it's like, you didn't have your story. You didn't have the event where you fucked up and your character that you wanted to stay alive died. Like, you didn't have that moment, because that happened to me while I was playing House of Ashes. You know, it's like, and also the same thing with Until Dawn. It's like, I want to keep all the characters alive. That's my goal every single time. And it's like, damn, I got through with 4 out of 6 or whatever, you know? It's like, it's really fun. Very.
I always love as well with like, in terms of playing it blind, like some of the surprises in terms of like, oh, a thing that you set up in chapter 2 actually comes back in like chapter 8 or whatever. Yeah. And it's like important. And I like stuff like that, because it feels like, when the game's quite slow paced at the start, a lot of it can sort of sometimes feel like it's kind of wasting your time, like spinning its wheels, because the way these narrative games are made, which I think I've talked about this before, but it like makes sense on like a, like the difficulty to do something else, you'd have to make it like a text adventure or something. But in terms of these games, they only actually branch out in like the last few chapters typically, or there's maybe like one or two characters that can die early, but the rest can't, for example. Because they make all the branching happen right at the end. If they made the branching happen right at the start, you'd have this like crazy, like massive game where it's like most people aren't even seeing like, you know, 1/3 of the stuff that happens. So it can be kind of annoying in that sense, because you're like, oh, well, I would have ended up here no matter what. Like, I ended up here, you know, even if I was trying to mess up the playthrough as much as possible or whatever. But so it's always nice to see, and you do see it in this game sometimes, where stuff that happens early does matter later. So it's always like a nice, like, okay, so it's not quite as branching and, you know, it is pretty linear in some ways, but at least you've got some early decisions mattering later in the game, which is nice. But in terms of the achievements, the game kind of sucks in terms of achievements, which is always the case with these games. We complained about the Supermassive games before, and it's maybe not quite as bad as some of the others, but it's still pretty bad, is what I would say. So the worst aspect with all of them is that you need to play the same sequences over and over, and there's no easy way to like skip stuff. And some of it is just like exposition. Like, it's not even, interesting stuff to some extent. And in the quarry, so when you beat the game, you get a chapter select, which is nice. Sounds good. Sounds great. However, the chapter select is kind of useless, because if you go back to chapter one to do something, at that point, like if you've used the chapter select to go to chapter one, or let's say chapter two, you have to then beat the whole game, like to go back to a chapter after chapter one. So say if you've like missed something in chapter three and you've missed something in chapter eight, if you go back to chapter three first, you then can't like quit out and go to chapter eight. You'd need to just play the whole game again until chapter eight. So that sucks. Obviously, it shouldn't work like that. It should just let you hop around wherever you want to go. The other problem that combines with this into like one mega problem is the collectibles don't save if you use the chapter select. So if you miss one collect, let's say you don't even miss like one collectible in chapter three and one collectible in chapter eight. If you miss a collectible in chapter three, you have to go back to chapter select chapter three. You have to get that collectible, and then you have to play the rest of the game and get every collectible in every subsequent chapter all over again to get the achievement to unlock, I'm pretty sure. And it's all quite confusing and annoying, but that's the way it works.
And the thing is, like, this isn't the first time. I don't know if it's this engine. I don't know what's up at Supermassive, but this is not the first time. The exact same thing happened on House of Ashes, and I'm sure it happened on the other games.
Yeah.
But, like, if you chapter selected, which, by the way, House of Ashes did not launch with a chapter select. They had to add that in later because it was just, like, it's so broken. It would be missing chapters. Whenever they added it, it was like, I don't know, there would be like four or five chapters that were just gone. And it's like, what the hell is going on with this? Like,
yeah, you basically, unless you miss a collectible that's like right at the end of the game, you basically have to replay like the whole game or a large section of the game over again, which it really sucks. Like, I can't believe that it's like the fact that if you go back to an early chapter, you then can't go back and chapter select the later chapter. That sucks. But if it at least saved the collectibles, like what you could do is, let's say you've missed a collectible in chapter 9, in chapter 7 and chapter 3, you could at least do like the chapter 9 one first, then the chapter 7 one, then the chapter 3 one, and then you'd have all of them, right? Because you're going like you're cutting off like backwards, basically. So that would work. But because the collectibles don't save, and it like wipes everything after that point, you can't do that and it won't work. At least I don't think it'll work. Or you'll have to like, or you'll basically, if you did that, you'd be like tripling the amount of time you have to play, because then you'd have to go back to like chapter 9, get the collectible, beat the game. Chapter 7, get the collectible, beat the game. Chapter 3, get the collectible, beat the game. So you might as well just go chapter 3 and then go through that way. But yeah, it's a really, really stupid system. Like, it makes no sense. I don't know like why they would do that. It's just terrible. And then the other annoying aspect, and this is again the case with all of their games basically, to get all the collectibles you need to do two playthroughs minimum, which isn't as bad as some of their other games, but you can't get everything in one playthrough, and there's no way you'll get it blind as well, because there's stuff where early decisions influence which collectibles become available later. So there's no way you can predict that. There's no way you can figure that out on your own. You're going to need a guide for that. Or you're going to need to play the game like 15 times, which I don't know why anyone would do that. And then the last thing to complain about in terms of the achievements is one of the achievements is unobtainable and glitched. No one can get it. So, yeah, that's obviously not good. If one of the achievements doesn't work, they need to patch it and fix it. I don't know if the trophy's broken as well or if it's just the achievement, but...
It is. While you were talking about a lot of the problems, I was going to bring it up because I cannot believe that. I could not believe it. I opened up the guide and it says glitch trophies 1, hard pass. And it's completely unattainable as of the most recent patch. And I'm like, damn, what the fuck is
going on? So a really bad achievement and trophy list for many reasons, which really sucks. Like, because it's a good game and I want to recommend it to people. But it's like, I don't know if I'm going to, I'm like you were with House of Ashes. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to complete this because it's just really, really annoying. Like, there's not like a perfect guide as well. There's a collectible guide, but it's like you have to combine collectibles with keeping everyone alive or killing everyone as well, unless you want to do an extra like two playthroughs. And so there's no guide that like has like all of it combined in like the minimum amount of playthroughs, if that makes sense. So it's like you have to figure that out on your own and you have to like piece it together. And I'm sure it's fine. But again, because of the chapter select thing, if you mess up one thing, it's like that's a whole other playthrough potentially, which really sucks. You just got to keep checking as you go. Yeah, not great.
I know that you mentioned us doing a spoiler cast. It might be a little later, but I really wanted to play this like around October. Not too late in October, because what is it? Callisto Protocol? Does that come out like the 20th or something like that?
There's a game. It was November or December.
That might be true. I just know that there's a horror game that's coming out around the October like 20th. And I'm
Spore
like,
oh, it's coming out then.
Yeah. So
in that game.
Yeah. So I'm probably going to play something like that later in October, but early in October, dude, I love horror games in October. So it's like I could play this game in October and we could do the spoiler cast then, but hopefully by that time, yeah, like maybe you'll replay it and get the completion, because it should be fixed up. Like,
yeah, I could do that. I think as well, even if we don't do a spoiler cast, we can just, like, when you talk about what you've been playing, we can just go into, like, spoiler territory then, you know, for the and mark it as, like, a separate section or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'll be good. The other thing as well, like, the final complaint about achievements that I have is I killed a character in my blind run, but, you know, in the end of these games, they give you, like, a wrap-up where they're like, oh, like... They show like each character and they're like, you know, this is what happened to them. This is what happened to this guy. This is what happens and so on. And it does that in this game. I killed a character and like definitely killed the character. Like he's definitely dead, like 100% dead. There's no way he's alive. And the ending thing was like, oh yeah, so he's, you know, just hanging out. You know, he's coming back next summer or something. Like it's like what? Like he's dead. Like he's definitely dead. Like, so if it wasn't my blind playthrough and it was like my all deaths run, you know, the achievement to kill everyone, and it glitched out on me like that, and you only find out like right at the end, I'd be really pissed off. So that's, you know, another really annoying thing about the game. And I'm pretty sure there is a way to kill that character sooner in the game and it doesn't glitch, because people have that achievement for sure. But the fact that, like, you can't even, like, you have to do it in a particular way and it doesn't fully work and it's not fully consistent really, really sucks. So, achievement list, pretty bad. Somehow not quite as bad as some of their other games, I think, but still, they've got a long way to go.
Yeah. And, dude, Ninja Turtles came out last week, or was it this week? But I didn't buy it. I'm kind of waiting, because it's like, dude, I really have bought a lot of games and then I just don't play them. And I'm like, I'm just going to play games before I just go out and buy another game and then have it sit there for a while. Because I bought Far Cry and Ghostwire Tokyo on sale. And then my buddy and I, we game share, and it's like, he has Sifu. So it's like, I have three massive games. I have three massive games that I could play. And like, I don't have to spend any money. So I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm probably going to start heading back into those once I get closer on Stardew. But I've read, dude, I cannot believe this. I've heard people spend like so many hours in Far Cry and it's like a 25 hour platinum. I'm like, what the fuck? How could you spend so much time in a game that has a 25 hour platinum? I don't know. I don't. Maybe it's the Ubisoft collectibles thing, but it's crazy.
It might be that's a good thing if it really is that short to platinum, because yeah, that implies to me there's like a bunch of side activities that don't track towards achievements, which in this case... Sometimes
thing.
I don't like it. In this case, I do like it, because
yes.
Far Cry, there's a lot of those games, and
filler.
Ubisoft games are quite similar to each other, and there's some repetitive aspects. So I actually think that's a good decision if that's the case.
Yeah, I think Ubisoft just has way too much filler. They just have a lot of like bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm probably going to enjoy Far Cry. I always have. It's one of my favorite franchises. Because it's just wacky as fuck. It's a wacky first-person shooter. Like, there's not very many first-person shooters where you're, you know, going back to Far Cry 3. You're just dropped on an island, and you have to try to save your friends. It's, like, so weird. And then, you know, all of them have been that way. They're, like, different global locations, and you're just exploring these areas and taking it over and basically creating a resistance. That's what every single Far Cry game is. I'm signed up for it. I know what it is. I'm going to do it.
I think that of all the sort of Ubisoft franchises that have been milked to death, so I guess for that I mean Assassin's Creed, Ghost Recon, Far Cry, and maybe Watch Dogs, although there's only three of those. But yeah, of all of them, I definitely think Far Cry is my favorite. And I think it has like the coolest differences between them as well. Like they're very similar, but they also have a good amount. Like especially like... The original three Far Cry games, all of those play super differently. And then there's stuff like Far Cry Primal as well, which plays really differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's probably my favorite of that, like, the sort of Ubisoft template type game. I've been playing two other games. So I've been playing an indie game called Disc Room. It's on Game Pass. It's a Devolver Digital title. When you mentioned the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game as well, that's also on Game Pass, so I might check that out at some point. I've heard, like, the co-op is really fun with it, so I feel like I can probably get, like, a couple of people together to play it. The thing that sucks is I don't think it has cross-play, which is always the problem, because it's like, you know, you end up talking to people and a bunch of them have it, like, on Switch, on PlayStation, on Xbox, on PC, and it's like you can't all play together. And yeah, so maybe that'll be difficult, but hopefully with Game Pass, at least, like I definitely have friends that have Game Pass and, like, use it, so it's like that makes it easier than people having to buy, like, several copies on different platforms and stuff like that.
Send me an invite, because I grew up with Turtles in Time on Super Nintendo, and I will jump in and play this. I might not achievement hunt it with you, but yeah. I might, like, I would definitely get Game Pass and, like, play that with you, because that game, sweet. Amazing.
Yeah, I'll definitely, yeah, because I've heard great, it's been getting, like, crazy good reviews and everything as well, so I think the achievement list is quite hard, but I definitely feel like it's a game where I can get, like, at least 500 or 600 points, so it
and
seems
it's
like
six
it would
player
be,
by the way.
Yeah that's nuts.
So we can get a big party and it would be really fun.
Yeah for sure. But I've been playing this game called Disc Room. It's a Devolver Digital game. It's really simple, so you just go through rooms with moving saws and you try to survive for as long as possible. And then you have certain requirements in each room. And then if you complete them, you unlock more rooms to go through where there's even deadlier saws and so on. And I really enjoyed this game. I mean, it's like, it's so straightforward and it focuses on, like, one core idea, but it's, like, intense, but also relaxing because you get into, like, a flow state where you're just focused on dodging. And they add a lot of complexity to the game because they add, like, different disc enemies. But then you also unlock abilities where you can dash through discs or slow down time, absorb discs, shoot discs away. You can even, like, clone your character, which gives you extra lives. But all the clones, like, react to the same input, if that makes sense. Like, if you move forwards, all four of them will, like, move forwards. So it's like it becomes harder to dodge as a unit, but you also get more lives in terms of that. So there's, like, really cool added layers that they add on top of this game. And there's some, like, simple puzzle solving aspects with, like, challenges and secret rooms, and there's a secret ending. And I think what ties this whole game together for me, a lot of this type of game, like this arcade-y style, like survive as long as possible type games, or, like, you know, they're kind of reminiscent of, like, Endless Runners and stuff like that. A lot of those types of games are endless and the levels are, like, procedurally generated. But what I love about this game is that it's got a set beginning and a set ending, and it's, like, a 3 to 5 hour experience, and you, like, play through it, and then that's it. There's, like, optional hard mode levels as well, where it's, like, similar levels, but they amp up, like, the amount of saws and the difficulty of the saws. And it kind of reminds me of Super Meat Boy in that you have, like, these regular levels and then these dark mode levels. And it has so many ideas in terms of, like, the abilities and the room layouts and the enemy types and stuff like that. Like, there's one area where you have to stand in, like, this circle in the middle in order for the time to go up. So you're trying to survive as long as possible, but also you have to stay in, like, this ring in the center. And then there's one where, like, there's this, like, sand set of levels where almost like the sandworm from Dune every so often, like, comes up and tries to eat, like, part of the floor, and so you have to, like, get out of the way while also dodging the discs. And then there's one where, like, the lights keep flashing on and off, so you, like, can't see properly, and, like, some of the saws are in the dark and you've got to, like, try and dodge them. So there's, like, really cool level layouts, and they add all these abilities, and it doesn't stay too long on one idea. Again, it's only like 3 to 5 hours. So it does an idea, changes things up, makes you sort of play the game differently, and then gives you another idea and another idea and another idea. And it's just really satisfying to play something like that that isn't, like, stretched out way too long or isn't procedurally generated and sort of different for everyone. And I just highly recommend people checking it out for just, like, a chill, like, short game. I mean, it's weird because it's chill, but it's also, like, really stressful because it's like it's hard to, like, survive for, like, 20 seconds in a room. But I played it through xCloud on my phone as well for some of it while I was out, and it seemed like a good fit on the easier levels, at least. But yeah, I really enjoyed that game, and the map layout makes a lot of sense. You can easily, like, move between rooms. It just does things so well with such a simple premise and being able to run with it, which I really appreciate, especially for these smaller scale like indie games.
Yeah, I gotta say, Devolver really picks up some good titles. Like they're becoming quickly one of my favorite publishers, them and Annapurna.
It feels like with Devolver, it's like when you play one of the games, you know it's going to be at least interesting. Like you might not love it, but you'll think about it and you'll remember it, and you'll see some ideas that you don't really see anywhere else.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love stuff like that. It's so cool that you pick something like that up. It's really interesting to hear about.
Yeah, it's an easy completion as well, especially with if you use a guide for some of the sort of late game secret stuff. But yeah, it's just a really rewarding, really satisfying game. And the last thing I've been playing, Fall Guys, released today on Xbox.
Oh.
So I've been playing some this morning. I played it with a friend. I'm going to play some more later, I think, and had an amazing time. I've watched a lot of content on the game, and I think I've played it briefly like around a friend's house before and enjoyed it then. But this is like my first time like super getting into it. And I won my first ever game, so I was happy about that on Xbox.
That's
and
really
I've,
cool.
I've got 3 wins right now, so I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, people are obviously it's like a compared to other battle royale games, it's definitely like a children's game, like a younger children's game, as well as appealing to like adults and teenagers and stuff like that. So I feel like the population isn't as good as other battle royale games. Like if I play Apex, part of it is the skill-based matchmaking, but I think part of it is probably the population. When you play that, like people are insane at that game now. Like the general people who play it are like fucking crazy in terms of like if you stop playing that game or you don't play much of that game, like you can get like left behind. It's terrifying. So I was worried about that when I played Fall Guys because I was like, oh, this game's been out on PlayStation and PC for a long time now. Are people going to be like absolutely insane at this game? But they don't seem to be. So that's nice that I'm not like. Because it sucks when you play like a new game and you're like behind by like months and months of like the meta game and the experience and all of that. So yeah, I've been getting into it. I've been surprised how pleasant an experience it's been.
Yeah, that game, I've watched like YouTube channels play that game and I've been to friends' house and played that game, but I never played it on my account. And that is just a cute, fun video game and like a brilliant idea. Just a bunch of different mini games and then every season they can just do different mini games in order to, and like that's just randomized and that's how you play, and it's so genius. Do you plan to hunt it?
Yeah, I think I'll try and get all the achievements. I noticed actually, which is really cool, if you played the game on another system, on PC or Steam or PC or PlayStation, you, because everything's connected through like your Epic Games account, as soon as you log in on Xbox, you unlock all the achievements that you have on the other platforms.
Whoa.
So if you like got the platinum trophy and then you got it on Xbox, you'd immediately get 1,000 gamer score on Xbox and vice versa, I think, because I saw Macker on Twitter say that he loaded it up on Xbox and he immediately got 400 gamer score and like 2/3 of the achievements. And I've looked on True Achievements and people have already got the completion in this game. So I assume it's because they've like done it on PC and then just loaded up and like got everything unlocked. So everything carries over, which is quite cool.
That is really cool.
But for me, I'm like on like a fresh save. So I think I will go for it, but there's some that are like really like the win 5 games in a row.
Yep.
It's like the infamous achievement, but if like it will be something where I'm going to go for it. But obviously if I've put in like 100 hours and I don't have like close to all the achievements, then I'll probably move on and get bored of the game, I assume. So it depends really. But for now I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go for everything.
There used to be a way, I think, I don't know if it's private or just like a way to get around the 5 wins, and people were doing that so that you could like, you could just get into a huge lobby with people and they let you go and win.
Right. Like a boosting session.
Yeah. And so I have heard people doing that, and that's like actually why I asked. I was like,
yeah,
if you hunt this game, that's the one, that's the only trophy or the only achievement that's like gonna be a problem, I feel like.
Yeah,
the rest I haven't heard anything
legitimately. I remember the big controversy about it originally, I believe, was that in Fall Guys you can get team games, and if you're on like the bad team, like if your team just sucks, then you're gonna lose no matter what. Like it doesn't matter how good you are as like an individual, if everyone on your team is bad and everyone on their team is good based on how like it splits it, then you're just going to lose and get eliminated, and that's it. So that seemed to be the big frustration for people, because it's like, even if I get like really, really good at this game, if I get like, if I get three wins in a row, and then on my fourth one, it puts me on like a bad team, and then we lose, and then it's like, oh, I got to start all over again. That sucks. But from what I've seen now, in terms of the playlists, you can do a playlist where it's just like solo games, like it's no team games. So then at least it's like dependent on your own skill. I mean, there's some luck involved, I'd say, in Fall Guys, but for the most part, like, it's really, it can be really dependent on your own skill. So that's encouraging to me, because it's going to still be really, really tough, but at least I won't just get like screwed by like RNG completely by being on like a bad team.
That's true. Well, are you ready to talk about the topic on the table?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Okay. So we've talked about this before, where we talked about like what got us into hunting and like how it started for us. But I was looking back and I was trying to figure out where it really started, because I was filling out backlogged. And as I'm going through the games, I'm seeing these large gaps where I'm just trying, like I'm borrowing games from friends as I'm a kid and I'm just trying different things. But like my literally six of my first 10 games that I played on PlayStation 3, I platinumed. So 6 out of 10, I platinumed. And then I kind of go through a drought. And then I think during the PS3 generation, as I'm a kid, I'm like, oh, wow, I love this game a lot. I want to play it more. I will platinum it. And that's like where I was. But it looks like as I continued to look through my trophies, right as the PS4 generation started, I think that's whenever I started to get into podcasts and stuff. Let's see, 2014. So I didn't get into podcasts until like 2015, 16. And yeah, 2016. And that's whenever I start like popping them like crazy. It's like platinum, 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 no platinum, platinum, no platinum, platinum, platinum. It's just like I'm starting to get into that groove of I'm a trophy hunter now. And this is what I want to do with the games. Like I want to complete them. I'm trying my best to complete them, but it looked like Second Son for me, like the launch PS4 Infamous game was the one where I was like, yeah, I want to start hunting PS4 games. And like, I think I didn't count, but I think I have like 16 platinums on PS3. And then obviously on PS4, I mean, I had well over 100. And so that's where it really started for me. I didn't start super early, even though I was hunting games that I had gotten right whenever I got the system. So I always had trophies in my mind, but it wasn't something that I was really adamant on, like every day, every game I play, I want to complete it. And I was kind of curious where your journey like kind of kicked off, if it was during that 360 generation, or if you remember a game where you're like, yeah, this is really fun and I want to continue to do this.
Yeah, for me, I can see how our journey's sort of similar, but kind of like I've not meticulously tracked down like when there was a shift, and I'm not sure there was a shift. A lot of the change is sort of gradual, but I'd say I definitely went through different stages where I sort of was casually interested in achievements, and then I became an achievement hunter in the sense of like trying to get like the gamer score number as high as possible rather than the completions. And then now I'm like more into completions. Part of that will be because we've talked about before the, I guess, like, I don't know, hyperinflation of trophies and gamer score in terms of all these really easy, like Ratalaka games that take like 10 minutes and will give you like 3000 gamer score or whatever. Yeah. That now it's like the actual number in terms of number of platinums or number of gamer score, it like doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't really mean anything. It means less than ever. Like back during the 360 gen and like the early PS4, Xbox One generation, it did mean something, I think, because even the easy games were like, the easy games were usually like 3 hours or like 8 hours, with like rare exception of like Avatar or whatever, which was like 2 minutes. But pretty much everything else was multiple hours long. So if you had a high gamer score or a high platinum trophy count, it really meant a lot more than it means now. So I, you know, moved on sort of mid Xbox One generation to caring about like very specific games and games that I love and getting those to completion rather than, you know, super easy games. And sometimes I'll do super easy games if I want to do something that's like really mindless and just, you know, just to see like number go up or whatever. But I don't think it means anything. I think that's just like a relaxing thing to do sometimes. But now actually my drive, it's definitely towards games that I personally really care about and really enjoy.
That's kind of where the hunting really kicked off for me. So like I started to realize, obviously, I've loved games my whole life, but there was a short period where you know how I am now. I'm like anti-multiplayer, but I did play a lot of multiplayer during like my high school years because I didn't have a job and I didn't have money to get new games. And any money that I did try to get new games because I was always curious in playing more games. And then, like I said, I started to get into gaming podcasts actually. And like, I didn't even know that those things existed at that time. Like I was fresh out of high school and I was like, whoa, you know, there's people doing Podcast Beyond and other things. And like all over, there's podcasts, you know, Giant Bomb and whatever, Rooster Teeth, everything. Like there's this huge network of these gaming podcasts all over the internet. And I'm like, whoa. So I start listening to those while I'm playing games and I'm hearing people try different games. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll just complete this one and then I'll try something new. And then I'll complete that one and I'll try something new. And then I'll play that. And then people start recommending because like I'm getting into these communities all over the place and people are like, you got to play this. So I'm starting to play all these different games, but the completionist in me is like, okay, so I'll complete these to say that like I beat all of these games. And then the numbers just started to stack up kind of like you were talking about. And that's whenever the like addiction kind of sank into me. It's like, wow, look at my numbers. I have 50 now. What? 50? I can't believe it.
Yeah. So for me, what like similar to what you said, what started me on like achievements is unclear. Like I remember really enjoying Mirror's Edge, but I only went back to it to get like the completion years later. I feel like for me, like a big game was Dead Space, where I originally played it in like, I think 2009 maybe. And I was like terrified by the intro. I was like, oh, what the fuck? Like I can't handle this. And then I came out, I don't know, 4 months later or something. And then my fondest memories of achievement hunting are probably those two games, Mirror's Edge and Dead Space. And I know Dead Space in particular, I got like super obsessed with that game and I got like every achievement and really, really loved it. So that's kind of like the early like 360 era for me. Those are like the two where it was like, I'm really into getting achievements in these games and challenging myself. But also what got me into achievements is back in the 360 generation, Rooster Teeth started up Achievement Hunter. And I remember watching like tons of their content. Like, I don't really watch their stuff anymore. I know they still produce videos, but they've mostly moved away from achievement guides now. And I loved, like, back in the day, like, watching guides for games I hadn't even played yet. And you'd hear, like, the banter between the hosts. And they seem, like, really passionate about games and getting achievements. And that sort of got me into it. Because I'd heard of, like, Red vs. Blue and watched stuff like that as well from them. And later they did some Let's Play stuff, and I really enjoyed that. And just, yeah, listening to, like, Jeff, Jack, Ray and Michael play games and get achievements in games. And during the guides as well, they'd always do a really good job of like talking about like random bullshit or like talking about their experience getting the achievement rather than just like the guide itself, rather than just like, oh, here's what you got to do. They'd be like, okay, so, you know, this part's a pain in the ass or whatever, or like, you know, I got distracted and blah, blah, or whatever. They'd have like a lot of personality that they'd really add to the guides that I really appreciated. And it made it kind of addictive because you'd still want to see, even if the game you're not really that interested in, you'd still want to see how they got the achievement and like what issues they came across and that kind of thing. Like it was always really interesting to me. And then from that, I still watch Ray's streams, and I naturally found like Maca and PS4/PS5 trophies now and Power Picks and all of those different channels. And then, you know, that was sort of I don't know what pushed me towards achievements the most, I guess. And then, yeah, just into the whole like metagame behind achievements and everything, it became interesting from seeing all of those channels and from my own experiences with Mirror's Edge and Dead Space.
That's what influenced me too. And it's funny that you mentioned Achievement Hunter, because even though I was a PlayStation trophy hunter, I still watched some of their videos at that time because they would cover games that I was trying to platinum. And it was like a lot of the time, a lot of achievements are the same as they are on PlayStation. So I was like, these guys put personality into it. And then later on, I did find, you know, PS4 trophies, Brian at PS5 trophies, you know, same thing. And I ended up watching a lot more of his videos. And it seemed like, just, you know, as I mentioned, with all the podcasts and stuff, it just seemed like these YouTube channels really influenced how I was excited to hunt games, because I saw other people were doing it. And it was just like such a fun hobby, you know?
Yeah,
it was
like, there were still like guides before Achievement Hunter in terms of like on like game facts and stuff like that. Like there was always like guides for doing stuff in games, before the Achievement Hunter stuff, but I feel like Achievement Hunter really made it mainstream and popularized it a lot more. Not like, obviously, not super mainstream, but much more mainstream, and added like so much personality to it and encouraged other people to make content about achievements and about completions and things like that. So I think they were like really what kickstarted it, at least for me.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Like, I think that it was a big boom on YouTube that did start this. And it's been, I've listened to podcasts before where people are like, oh, I used to achievement hunt. And they're like, why did I stop? It's like, people do enjoy doing it. There are bullshit games that really fucking suck to grind out, but it seems like it's a super enjoyable hobby to do, to like get those numbers up. And arbitrary, obviously, they don't matter, but it's just such a fun thing to do. And it was interesting to look back on that. But are you ready to do the trophy and achievement of the week?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I'm bringing two this week, because as I was looking through my trophy log, actually, because I was really trying to pinpoint where it all started, and it really looks like Infamous Second Son, but I ended up seeing this trophy that was called Touch My Rear, and it's from Uncharted Golden Abyss, and it's on Vita. And Vita has the touchpad on the back, and I just thought this trophy name was so funny and like punny, because you touch the back of the Vita, and it's just like, that is a hilarious, hilarious achievement. And it's called Use the Rear, or it's not called, but the description is Use the Rear Touchpad to Climb a Rope or Chain. And it's just like, you just kind of take I took my middle fingers and I kind of just like swiped them down, because that's all you have to do is just kind of swipe them down like you're climbing. And I was like, that is so punny and very, very funny. And then the other one, which is something I don't know if I've done during our show, the course of our show, which, by the way, we just reached our 1 year anniversary of the show on June 12th. But it's the trophy is called No Ape Can Escape. Collect all other Ape Escape trophies. So it's a platinum trophy for Ape Escape. And I was like, that is a shout out, because I will be doing that at some point.
Ape Escape's great. I love Ape Escape. I miss it. There's so much like PS1, PS2 like nostalgia that I have for that type of game that feels like it doesn't really get made that much anymore. Definitely not by like first party in terms of Microsoft or Sony, really, where it's like, I just love those like charming, like smaller ideas that look like cartoony and play, I guess, unconventionally. Yeah, I love Ape Escape. I hope you have a good time with it.
I can't wait.
Yeah. For my achievement of the week, I picked, it's from Discroom. It's called Gotta Catch 'Em All, which is a Pokemon reference. And it's to die from every disc in the game. So I really love this achievement because, I mean, for multiple reasons, but firstly, I like when games make death its own reward in some way. So we were talking about the Callisto Protocol earlier, and that game and Dead Space and some of the Resident Evil games, they like, when you die, like the death animation is like super cool sometimes. So you're like, oh, I died and that sucks and this is horrific, but also this like looks amazing, like the gore and all the detail and everything, and that they've really thought carefully about like how this enemy or how this hazard would like mutilate your character. So I love when games do that in like any way, in terms of like making like a death like either a satisfying thing or like a reward, and it's quite clever. This game doesn't have like fancy animations or anything, but giving an achievement for dying every possible way is really compelling. And the other thing I like about it is that you being actively encouraged to die from like every type of disc, it can make death like less frustrating, because it's like, oh, at least I ticked off that thing that I needed to do. And then the game tracks every disc you've died to. Like, it gives you like the name of it, it gives you like an animation of it, and it shows you like a count for how many times you've died to that type of enemy. So like you can look in like the pause menu, it like tracks all the stats for it, and it tracks like the discs that you haven't discovered yet and like the rooms that they're in. And also like, it's just really easy to like see everything that you've done and everything that you need to do. And we talked about like the quarry, right, before, and how like the collectibles absolutely suck in that game. And then there's this indie game that does it like so masterfully. And it's like just some simple like dying to every enemy type, but it's just got everything like perfectly cataloged and like the exact count of all of it. And then the rooms where they are. And it's brilliant. And then it's not only like a joke achievement or like an incompetence type achievement, which I also love those types of achievements, but some of the discs are really hard to find and really hard to die to. So that's like an extra layer on top of everything I love about this achievement. There's these golden discs that are really hard to find and difficult to die to. And you don't get like anything else special for dying to them. You just get like this progress towards this as like a collectible. But there's one disc, for example, where if you run into the center of it, it will kill you. But around it, there's this huge radius that pushes you away. So you can't ever like run to the center of the disc. But you have to die to it to get this achievement. So the way you do it is you have to absorb the disc, and then like with the absorb ability, and then go into like a different room where you can't move, like you're stuck like in like a box basically. And so then you like unabsorb the disc right on top of you in like this tiny room, and then that will kill you, and then that counts towards the progress in terms of dying to that specific enemy type. So there's so many wonderful things about this achievement in terms of how it's like making death a reward, in terms of having great collectible tracking, but then also having this like puzzle and like secret aspect to dying to some of the discs. Whereas obviously for a lot of the discs, it's really easy to die to them because, you know, they're the main like enemy in the game. Like everything that kills you is a disc basically. So yeah, I love that achievement. It was a really nice surprise in Disc Room.
I love that too. That's a damn good achievement. And like, you know, you talking about that really brought to mind Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider has a lot of death animations, and it's so twisted that it's like, I love when games have death animations. It's like, it's like, oh, I died, but it's like, oh, damn, that was brutal. It's like that fun release where it's like, maybe I don't need to be frustrated because something crazy just happened. Like, yeah, it's distracting.
It's really inventive and clever to make death its own reward in some way in a game. And it's not done by many games. So anything where they're like, oh, let's... It's like, again, like I talked about this game earlier and said, like, it's such a simple idea executed really well. And they've clearly like thought about like every different angle to it, like everything they can get out of it. They're like, they're going for it. They're like, any aspect to the mechanics or to what happens in the game, they're like, okay, we're going to make this its own thing that's really satisfying and inventive. And yeah, I really appreciate it.
That's really dope. Well, that's kind of it for our show. Do you have any final thoughts, AJ?
No, I'm hoping I can like keep up playing a ton of stuff. I'm really excited for Cuphead next week for sure.
Oh yeah, holy shit! Yeah, I'm excited for July because Stray is coming, and I just can't wait to play that.
Yeah, that game seems awesome.
Everyone, thanks for listening. Peace out. Happy hunting.
See ya.
Thank you so much for listening to Complete Edition. If you like the content, consider supporting us on Patreon.com/Completion Club. If you have any questions or would like to reach us, email completionclub@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to Complete Edition.